Well, and good morning. It's 16 minutes after 8 a.m. You're tuned to your community radio station, Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, 42 degrees in downtown Sitka. That's a little bit of clearish skies poking out there. Joining me in the studio is Lloyd Platson with Sitka Counseling and Prevention Services. Lloyd is the Employee Development Coordinator here to talk about mental health first aid training. Welcome to Morning Edition, Lloyd.
Thank you for having me.
Well, there's a mental health first aid training coming up, and that's going to be a first three mental health trainings coming up. The first one is Tuesday, September 29th. We don't often associate first aid when we think of mental health. What's the connection here?
Well, it's very much like the regular first aid that you'd go through. It's training people to kind of like be first responders to help identify when a person's experiencing mental health issues. Maybe as they're developing, might be as simple as a change in mood and that someone notices and just checks it out. And then helping people that might be experiencing a crisis, mental health crisis, to get them the aid and the support that they need professionally to overcome or deal with those issues that they might be experiencing. So it's really just training people to be aware, to respond appropriately, and to help connect people that are experiencing mental health issues with the services that are most appropriate for them.
And when we do physical first aid and CPR, there are very step-by-step response patterns. Is that similar with mental health first aid?
Yes. Actually, when participants come through the training, they'll actually learn a five-step, I guess it's a mnemonic, how to remember the different steps. It's called LG, and there's actually a cute little bear, koala bear that goes along with it, whose name is LG. But the first thing is assess for the risk of suicide or harm. We always want to respond with what might be the most important thing to respond to. So people that might be experiencing depression, maybe thinking about suicide or hurting themselves. So that's the first thing we want to assess for. So we assess for suicide, risk, or harm. Then we want to listen non-judgmentally. I always think about how we used to respond to people that were experiencing mental health issues in the old days. You know, lock them away, get them away from society, protect society from them. And the reality is that that's just a false impression that a lot of time movies and media has, developed. And so we developed this negative reaction to people with that are experiencing mental health issues. So we want to try to present the reality out there of what it really is. So then we listen non-judgmentally, give reassurance and information. A lot of times, especially in rural communities, we don't have a lot of services. We don't have a lot of people that are educated on mental health issues and how to respond appropriate. So we want to listen non-judgmentally. Give that reassurance and information, encourage appropriate professional help, and then also encourage self-help. So there's a lot of, depending on what symptoms and what degree the person experiencing mental health issues, we want to be able to have the knowledge to connect them to the resources that they need to recover and to live a, a full life. So That's the main thing. So that LG is what the five-step thing is. So
people will walk away with concrete tools in their toolbox to be able to respond to mental health situations. You also briefly touched upon, though, this sort of broader goal that you have, and that's addressing the stigmatization of mental health.
Exactly. Again, I think a lot of us don't understand mental health issues. So we develop a sense of fear, and anytime there's fear, we develop ways of dealing with that, and oftentimes that leads to the stigmatization of mental health issues, not only for society as a whole, but also for the individual that is experiencing the mental health issues, an unwillingness to step forward. The average wait for a person who is initiating mental health issues is approximately 10 years before they get help. So there's a 10-year period that the person may be experiencing different types of pain, and they don't need to. If we as a society, as individuals, would not stigmatize them, have these fears against mental health issues, we could provide the services that the person needs to respond and begin the process of becoming well again. You know, it's because it really is a process from being well to starting to be unwell. And if we can, and that's where the mental health first aid comes in, is in that where the person is beginning to become unwell, so that we don't have to go into treatment and hospitalization. If we as a society, as members of the community, can respond in appropriate ways and connect the individuals that are experiencing mental health issues to the appropriate help, they don't have to go through that full process. So that's part of that. Stigmatism is part of it. And then just knowing that, we're kind of all in this together. If we want a healthy community, we all need to be aware, we need to be educated on all types of health issues. And I think mental health issues sometimes are things that we put on the back burner because we're not as comfortable with them as we are with responding, say, to cancer or to the common cold and all that type of stuff. So that's really the goal, is the stigmatism, and then how do we respond appropriately.
You know, you mentioned that people experiencing mental health issues are in pain. And I think that's a powerful concept that we don't typically think of in terms of mental health. It's easy to think of someone in pain if they've broken a leg or experienced a severe burn or if they have cancer, as you mentioned. When we think of people with mental health challenges in pain, I think that humanizes them a bit more. It might make it easier for us to respond with compassion.
Yeah, I would hope so. You know, I think mental health issues is probably the only one where we label the person with their symptoms. And again, this is part of that stigmatism. We label people with their symptoms, or when we say that person's crazy or they're schizophrenic or they're psychotic or whatever it is. And we don't do that same thing, say, with cancer. We don't say that person is cancer. But we do say that person is schizophrenic or that person is psychotic,
right,
or that person is depressed.
Right, we're defining the person entirely by their mental health state.
Right. And really, mental health is no different than physical health. It's just that we're not as comfortable as a society, I think, with that. And really, that's the goal of this mental health training, is to get people more comfortable so that they personally don't stigmatize unintentionally. I look at myself, and I thought I was a fairly aware person, a gentle person, a kind person. And I always tell the story of one of my coworkers who had obsessive compulsive tendencies and wanted things laid out just a certain way. And I used to think it was funny to kind of change her papers on her desk so that she would go back and straighten them. And after taking the training, I became a lot more aware. I felt bad for a while, but then I thought, well, no, I didn't know as much as I needed to know about the issue of mental health. And so I became a little bit more sensitive to that. And that's really what I hope people walk away from the training, not only having concrete ideas about the risk factors and the warning signs of mental health issues as they develop, but also just being more aware of their personal behavior, of how they relate to individuals that are experiencing mental health issues. Again, because of that stigmatism, we start looking at some of the statistics. 50% of the students that have mental health issues will drop out of school. And again, then we're losing that productivity, the gifts that they could bring to the community. And so we look at all that, and there's just all kinds of, 70% of the youth that are in the juvenile justice system have some type of mental health issues. So again, if we can recognize that early on and stop that process of from wellness to becoming unwell, we interrupt that process at an early point, the person doesn't have to be in the pain or in the darkness or whatever you want to call it for a long period of time. It's easier to respond early on and help that person deal with those issues than it is to wait until they have more severe issues. People with mental health, say depression. If we can deal with the depression early on and get the people the services that they need to overcome that depressive state, they may not move on to what we call a co-occurring disorder, which may be using substances to deal with that depression. Now we not only have the mental health issue, but then we have substance abuse issues. So
it's beneficial not only to individuals, but to your community at large.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it just makes sense to me to be more aware, more mm-hmm. educated. And, you know, and Sitka is such a wonderful place, I think. There are so many services in terms of health and wellness opportunities. Sometimes I think the mental health issue side of it, we're not quite as further along as we could be with that. So that's the goal of this. And I think what really triggered this was, you know, the recent tragedies with the landslide, knowing that individuals may be experienced a traumatic event, and how they deal with that trauma may be very different. And some people may, in fact, be in need of some services. And if we as a community are educated more, we can pick up those little signs and symptoms of individual that might be experiencing some type of a stress or whatever it might be related to that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason that Sitka Counseling, and we partnered with a couple of local churches, St. Peter's by the Sea and St. Gregory's Catholic Church, to provide the services, the training at a reduced cost. It's normally $75. We dropped it down to $35 to make it more accessible to people in the community.
And there are going to be three trainings. The first one is coming up on Tuesday, September 29th, 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Really quick, what are the other 2 dates?
Saturday, October 3rd, 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. And then Wednesday, Thursday, October 7th and 8th, I think it is, from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. We're trying to give a whole different time frame so that more people can access the training.
Okay, and so to register, how can people do that?
They can call Sitka Counseling and Prevention Services at 747-3636.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Lloyd.
Well, thank you for having me. This is a great opportunity, I think.
We've been speaking with Lloyd Platson. He's with Sitka Counseling and Prevention Services. Mental health first aid trainings are coming up. Call 747-3636 to register.
Financial support for KCAW comes from C-Mart Quality Foods, offering a full salad bar daily with fresh lettuce, assorted raw vegetables, cheeses, meats, and a variety of dressing options. C-Mart Quality Foods is located on Halibut Point Road and is open all day, every day.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 21st of September, 2015. Some anniversaries in the world of publishing. The most famous, most reprinted newspaper editorial published on this day, 1897, the Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus column in the New York Sun in response to a letter from an 8-year-old girl in New York City. Is there a Santa Claus? The reporter Francis Church wrote his famous reply to little Virginia O'Hanlon, saying, "He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias." Virginia lived at 115 West 95th Street in New York, and she grew up to be a schoolteacher in New York City. 1970, on this date, the New York Times came out with a new section called the op-ed page, opposite the editorial page, devoted to the columns of outside writers. It's the birthday of the man who created Penguin Books, Sir Alan Lane, born Bristol, England, 1902. 1935, he was waiting for a train, looking for something to read on the train. All he could find was magazines and reprints of Victorian novels, and he came up with the idea of publishing low-quality volumes of great contemporary fiction, hoping to democratize literature. It's the birthday of Herbert George Wells, H.G. Wells, born Brumley, England, 1866, one of the fathers of modern science fiction, who wrote The Time Machine, The Island of Dr. Moreau, and The War of the Worlds. H.G. Wells, a socialist with a strong interest in biology. He died just before his 80th birthday, having lived long enough to see much of the future he had imagined in the real world. And it's the birthday of Savonarola, Girolamo Savonarola, born in Ferrara, Italy, 1452, the great idealist who joined the Dominican monks preached against the Medici family in Florence, preached against the corruption of the Catholic Church, which got him in trouble with the corrupt Pope Alexander VI. And at the age of 46, Savonarola was arrested, tortured, and executed by hanging, and his ashes scattered in the Arno River. Here's a poem for today by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, entitled Curfew. Solemnly, mournfully, dealing its dole, the curfew bell is beginning to toll. Cover the embers and put out the light. Toil comes with the morning and rest with the night. Dark grow the windows and quenched is the fire. Sound fades into silence. All footsteps retire. No voice in the chambers, no sound in the hall. Sleep and oblivion reign over all. The book is completed and closed like the day, and the hand that has written it lays it away. Dim grow its fancies, forgotten they lie, like coals in the ashes they darken and die. Song sinks into silence, the story is told, the windows are darkened, the hearthstone is cold. Darker and darker, the black shadows fall, sleep and oblivion reign over all. Curfew, a poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com, and by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This station is supported by Harry Race Pharmacy, Photo, and Soda Shop, offering summer treats, ice cream cones, malts, milkshakes, or root beer floats from the 1950s soda fountain. Located at 106 Lincoln Street or online at whitesalaska.com. Harry Race, living local.
This is Sitka Spotlights, a series that features local residents sharing their art, work, and traditions with KCAW listeners.
You know, you get on this wood boat that's creaking and has its own character, and you go out on a trip, and it's making you money. It's taking you through these sunsets. It's carrying you through these incredible storms. You know, it just develops its own personality. It's a living thing that takes care of you.
Mike Nurko is a shipwright who lives in Eliason Harbor on his boat, the Nepente. I met him there on a rainy afternoon after he had just returned from a 5-week boat trip. Mike moved up to Sitka almost 15 years ago.
I had been up here doing some work, and I looked around, and what I saw was the largest fleet of commercial wood boats anywhere in the United States.
The basic job of a wood shipwright is simple: keep the boat afloat. But the tools and tricks involved make it an intricate art. Mike learned from old-timers in Bellingham, and he's inherited boxes of hand tools from them over the years.
Chisels and adzes and slicks and block planes and mallets. This is an old mallet. They're made out of black mesquite. And when you build wood boats that are planked up, you've got to fill the seams in. So the cotton goes into the seam first, and then you can put the oakum over the cotton. Oakum is hemp that's soaked in pine tar, so it keeps the water out and it makes the boat a lot stronger.
Mike loves boats, but he's not romantic about his job. It's high stakes and physically demanding, and it depends largely on the weather.
You know, if you're down there re-caulking a garboard in the rain and the fish gurry is coming out of the plank seams and it's running down your arms and...
Fish what?
Gurry is like halibut slime. It's like, gee, do I like my chosen profession? And then it could be quite sunny out and you're putting in planks of beautiful wood. That's very rewarding. Through the years, you work on the same boats over and over, and you really develop a relationship with that particular owner, as well as that particular boat.
There are several skilled shipwrights in Sitka, but very few new wooden boats are being built. I asked Mike,
is this dying out, what you do?
No, it's dead. The only way you can make a living as a shipwright now is if you do other things besides wood.
I asked other shipwrights about this, and they said, no, it's not dead, but Mike's right. In order to make a living, you need to know how to fix steel and fiberglass boats as well. So why is it still worth tending to an old wooden boat today?
In this day and age, people are making their money in such different ways that just make the wooden boat look so archaic. But the wood is, I'm convinced, the ultimate high-tech material. It's so strong and so limber and it's so alive that ultimately I think it's the simple things that will be the superior products.
That was Mike Nurko on Sitka Spotlights, a series that features local residents sharing their art, work, and traditions.
To listen to longer interviews, visit Sitka Spotlights at kcaw.org. Thanks to the Island Institute and the Sitka Fine Arts Camp for making this series possible through the Sitka Fellows Program. And good morning. It's 38 minutes after 8 a.m. You're tuned to Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. You can expect rain today throughout our listening region and continuing through at least Wednesday today. Showers in all of our communities, but a bit heavier rain today in Angoon, Tenneke Springs, and Hoona. It's currently 42 degrees in downtown Sitka and a little foggy and a little misty. We heard a number of news stories this morning on the one-month anniversary of the August 18th landslides. We heard from two friends of Elmer and Ulysses Diaz. Also, multi-agency GEO Task Force is looking for answers to last month's deadly landslide, and seven individuals are vying for the one open seat on the Sitka School Board. You can go to kcaw.org to listen to or read those news stories again, as well as check out the community calendar. It's 8:39. Here's NPR. Thanks so much for joining me this morning.